This is Cry Justice with Judy Redlich, examining issues of importance to you, your family, and our community that the other media just won't cover. Now, here's Judy Redlich.
My guest today says the Supreme Court decision on sodomy is simply giving credence to an unhealthy act and lifestyle, unhealthy physically, morally, spiritually, and psychologically. The six justices have abandoned common sense in favor of political activism. Why does he say that? Let's find out. My guest on this edition of Cry Justice is Bill Develin. Bill, welcome.
Thanks so much, Judy, for having me on. It's great to be with you and your listeners today.
Bill is the spokesperson for conservativepetitions.com as a part of the Urban Family Council. He and his family also live in Philadelphia. In fact, they live in the inner city in Philadelphia, he and his wife and five children. But, Bill, what gives you grounds to make such a harsh statement like that?
Well, it's not harsh. In fact, the most loving thing that I could say to the six justices of the United States Supreme Court right now, when any common sense thinking adult American could say to the Supreme Court, is that you made a grave error in affirming the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered lifestyle. And Judy, really what this decision has done is it's opened the lid on Pandora's box, because now they've said that they have found the right to have consensual homosexual sex in private between consenting adults. What's to say now that in America that if a father and a son, or a mother and a daughter, or a mother and a son, or two uncles or two cousins, or an adult and a child want to have consensual private sexual relations between one another, Lawrence v. Texas, this Supreme Court decision, now gives them the permission to do that. So this is permission-given behavior for aberrant sexual behavior by the six justices of the United States Supreme Court.
But it seems like that behavior is becoming more predominant these days. Why is it so wrong if it's becoming so predominant?
Well, it is predominant. In fact, we've had the predominance of immoral sexual behavior for about 10,000 years in the human race. So this is not some type of new phenomenon we're talking about. Immoral sexual behavior has been around for, like I said, about 10,000 years. But again, we who love common sense, we look to people that I would call the cultural gatekeepers in our society that would reaffirm that which is good, that which is healthy for our children and families, and that which is good for civil society. What the Supreme Court justices have done is they've now given permission to those who would practice immoral, and not only immoral, but also unhealthy sexual practices.
Now, Bill, I think that you're alluding to the fact that biblically this is wrong. Am I correct?
Well, and as a believing Christian, Judy, I would have to say that, sure, any sex outside of marriage is biblically wrong. However, we need to ask a larger question, because we live in a country that includes a lot of different people: atheists, Christians, Buddhists, non-religious people, et cetera. It's a pluralistic society. We need to say what is in the best interest of our culture. And what's in the best interest of our culture that is, if you are going to be married, you stay faithful to the person that you've married your whole entire life. So when we talk about immoral or aberrant sexual behavior, we're also including in that marital affairs, sex outside the beauty of marriage. We're also talking about premarital sex. That's not good for our culture. So this is not that we're picking on the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, transvestite community. What we're saying is that what's in the best interest of our culture, what's in the best interest of building a healthy society, a civil society, and also what's in the best interest of our children.
You also talk, Bill, about unhealthy physically, morally, spiritually, and psychologically.
Yeah. And, you know, Judy, that's a question I'm asked frequently, that Devlin, you know, you're a Democrat, but you're a social conservative, and you believe in the family as defined as one man, one woman for life. What does it matter to you if two adult men who consent to homosexual sex, how does that affect me? Well, really, I think the larger question, Judy, is how does it affect those two men that are engaged in that particular act? And frankly, as we know from science, that type of sexual relations is unhealthy, anatomically and also physiologically, and I say that also as a registered nurse, and yet we also know that because that's not what nature intended, that it's bad for those individuals emotionally and psychologically. And we also know the larger question of if there is transcendent truth and it is operative in our physical universe, then we also have to say it's bad for those two individuals spiritually. So it's almost as if, you know, for whom the bell tolls, the famous poet John Donne, well, who does it toll for? It tolls for me. And when one life is extinguished, then all of us are diminished. So we have to say, when anyone, including myself, if I were living a sexually immoral behavior or lifestyle, it would diminish you, it would diminish your listeners, it would diminish my five children, it would also diminish my wife and my relationship with her. This Supreme Court decision, we need to talk in terms of the larger context of what it means for all of us as human beings.
Do you put it on the same account as the Roe versus Wade decision and also the 1962 decision about taking prayer out of schools?
Yeah, no question, Judy. And your listeners need to know that the Lawrence versus Texas case is really the Roe v. Wade of 2003. What Roe v. Wade did is that it found the right to destroy an unborn child, and this is language that Harry Blackmun used, who wrote the majority opinion for the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. He said, and I'm quoting, "We find the right to abortion in the emanations of the penumbra of the right to privacy of the 14th Amendment." That's what the six justices last week, and Sandra Day O'Connor, appointed by a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, she basically said, "We find the right to consenting adult homosexual sex in the emanations of the penumbra of the right to privacy of the 14th Amendment." That's basically what they said, and every American should be crying out for justice and also for common sense.
Six justices have abandoned common sense in favor of political activism. Who were the justices that voted against this new law?
Well, it was Chief Justice William Rehnquist who wrote against Lawrence v. Texas. It was also Clarence Thomas, and it was also Antonin Scalia. And, you know, thank God for three courageous Supreme Court justices who were willing to take a stand for the truth. And basically, in Scalia's dissenting opinion, what he said was that the six majority justices have sold out to the homosexual agenda here in America, and our hearts are broken because of that.
Now, Texas wasn't the only place where this has happened. In the city of Philadelphia, they also acted in a similar matter. Maybe you could talk about that and why you are so concerned about that.
Yes, and, you know, it's happening around the nation. It's happening where your listeners live. And Judy, if it's not happening yet where your listeners live, I can guarantee, because of the Supreme Court decision, I give it 6 to 12 months before it comes to their community. And the next great discussion that America is going to be having is that if the sodomy laws have been stricken from the last remaining 13 states, Texas being one of them, where sodomy was illegal and a punishable crime, what we're going to see next is gay marriage. Because the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community will say, look, you've now decriminalized sodomy. Why shouldn't we have the right to marry, to adopt children, to have all the benefits of the heterosexual married community? What happened in Philadelphia beginning 4 years ago, and I was very grateful for the concerted effort of black clergy of Philadelphia and vicinity, also Cardinal Anthony Bevilacqua and the Latino clergy of Philadelphia, is that we went to city council that was considering a gay marriage bill, and we said, look, any time that marriage is diminished, whether it's through easy divorce, whether it's through marital affairs, whether it's through promiscuous heterosexual activity or premarital sex, anytime the family is redefined as other than one man, one woman for life, you're going to have societal problems at an emotional level, a psychological level, an economic level, and also at a spiritual level. You know, the great hue and cry that should be going up from those who love the American capitalistic system is that marriage is the best and it's the least expensive, in fact, it's free anti-poverty program that our country has ever seen. So we went to the City Council of Philadelphia and we said it's not a good idea. Philadelphia City Council and also our mayor at that time, who's now the governor of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, they rejected common sense. And so my wife and I and an interracial group of people went to the court system because we had exhausted legislative means. We went to the judicial system in Philadelphia, and we filed a lawsuit, and it's now being litigated before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, because what our argument is, Judy, is that you cannot have one marriage law in the county of Philadelphia, and Pennsylvania has 66 other counties that have another law for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really spinning out of control. The saddest part of this equation is that now our current mayor, John Street, and also our current city solicitor, Nelson Diaz, are now on the side of promoting homosexual marriage and the decline of marriage in Philadelphia. So I don't complain against the liberal media or against the ACLU or the National Organization for Women, but rather my beef is with evangelical born-again Christians who should know better and they should know what the Word of God says, but now they're advocating for homosexual marriage, for abortion, for gay rights. It's literally out of control.
William Devlin is my guest. He earned a Purple Heart when he was in Vietnam. He won some other awards in combat action. He lives in the inner city of Philadelphia, is raising his children there. And, Bill, I understand that your children also attend schools in the inner city. Why did you choose to stay in the inner city and raise your family?
That's the $64,000 question, Judy. And really, if your listeners get my drift, when Jesus Christ walked this earth, he told his followers, and I happen to be one of them, but back then he told his followers in the New Testament that we are to be salt and light. We should not be heading for the hills waiting for the return of Christ, but we should be active in our communities. And where's the need really needed? Well, it's needed in the inner cities, because the inner cities is where the greatest incidence of broken marriages are, the greatest incidence of divorce, the greatest incidence of father absence. So my wife Nancy and I have been married 24 years. 17 years ago, we made a decision that we are going to leave the comfort of the suburbs and move into this inner city and really be what I would call an incarnational witness to the inner city that, yes, you can live in a drug-infested, crime-filled neighborhood, and I've been stabbed and almost killed in the city of Philadelphia some 13 years ago, but we hung in there. We've raised five wonderful children. My children all love Jesus Christ. They're urban warriors. They've attended public schools. And they know their faith, and they know how to defend the faith and lovingly articulate the Christian faith in a rational and reasonable way. So that's why we've been there for 17 years, because we want to be that salt and light that Jesus Christ talked about, and we want to be that incarnational witness. 150 years ago, there was a Protestant evangelist by the name of D.L. Moody who said, if you win the cities, you win the nations. If you don't win the cities, they'll become cesspools and infect the entire nation. And I think, Judy, largely Christians have abandoned the inner city. We've moved out into the comfortable suburbs. Another Protestant evangelical theologian 22 years ago said, and his name was Francis Schaeffer, he said that the evangelical church is addicted to personal peace, comfort, and affluence. And I didn't want to be one of those ones. I wanted to raise my kids in the inner city. I wanted to display my marriage in the inner city. And God has given us the grace to remain there for 17 years, and that's why we've stayed all these years.
That was in the How Shall We Then Live series, wasn't it?
That's correct. When Francis Schaeffer, he wrote not only How Should We Then Live, but he also wrote The Great Evangelical Disaster.
Right.
And that's what he said, and he was a man that stood on principle. He's been dead now since 1984. And Lord willing, I'm going to be the Francis Schaeffer of this generation that will speak a clarion call to the evangelical church, to the Roman Catholic Church, to say, look, we need to be salt and light in our communities today.
I agree with you, Mr. Devlin. My family also lives in the inner city. We work with a ministry to help homeless. In fact, we train previously homeless people in broadcast skills and help them get their life back together with Jesus and help them get their feet back into society by helping them with the valuable skills that they might have missed when they were children. And we've seen that our children, in fact, we had an incident with my little boy last night. He's 10, and he's on the baseball team, a select team, and sure, he's not quite as good as the others because this was his first year playing, and God opened the doors for him to play on this team. Well, last night, the coach made an excuse why he and another boy shouldn't be playing, and my little boy cheered on the team, and I think my teenager was more upset about it than David was, but I saw a quality in my son, a character trait that is building because of his realization that life is unfair, and if you let it get to you, it'll make you bitter. But if you don't let it get to you and you brush it off and try to make the best of it, you'll get better, and your character will grow stronger. And heroes just aren't born, and they're not the ones that are, heroes are the ones that are rejected and have to pick up the pieces because of the rejection. They're the ones that aren't great at everything. They're the ones that pick up and carry on. And I think that as we look at where we stand in our nation today, there's got to be more heroes where people can look at their lives and go, they didn't make it to the top because of maybe a mom or a dad or a fortune that they got on the lottery. But they made it as heroes in my book because of their stalwart character.
Judy, you hit the nail on the head. I couldn't say it any better. And I think that particularly when I look at my own five children, Naomi, Sarah, Luke, Zachariah, and Lydia, and they range in age from 22 all the way down to 10, I want to be their hero. I don't want them looking to Eminem or 50 Cent or Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five or Queen Latifah. I want them to be able to say, wow, you know, my dad has been in jail for his faith. My dad was arrested when they tried to cover up the Ten Commandments in front of the Chester County Courthouse. My dad went to jail because of that, and I saw him being dragged away by the police in a loving way. So, yeah, and unfortunately, there's many of us in the church today, Judy, and we are what I would call Christian wimps. We are too addicted to security, to money, to our bank accounts, to our beautiful homes in the suburbs, to affluence and to comfort, that we don't want to come outside our evangelical ghetto and take a stand in a loving, reasonable, rational way for Jesus Christ. And who's not going to benefit from that? It's going to be our kids who are not going to benefit from them. They're going to look to the secular icons of the world and say, well, that person's my hero because they're different. I think if we live different, radical Christian lives, then our kids will say, hey, my mom, my dad, they're our hero.
Bill Devlin is my guest, and we've been talking about social justice issues. Are you willing to stand up for what you believe in, or are you going to be part of the comfortable group that slides down the slippery slope and allows such things as this new sodomy law to be enacted without you making a peep? ConservativePetitions.com. Bill, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, ConservativePetitions.com is where good-thinking, common-sense people of any faith can really log on at ConservativePetitions.com. And there are a number of petitions on there. And if one particularly they're concerned about, they can go in and they can send a letter to a member of the media, to their representative in Washington, D.C. The one that I would direct people to is I'm considering a run for Democrat presidential nomination. You know, right now there's 9 pro-abortion, pro-gay rights Democrats who want to be the next president. And I'm a Democratic committeeman in the city of Philadelphia, and I encourage people to go to conservativepetitions.com and log in that particular petition that talks about my potential candidacy for President of the United States, because I really want to change the Democratic Party. I want to make the Democratic Party an inclusive party where they include pro-life people, where they include Christians, where they include pro-family people, pro-marriage people. And so conservativepetitions.com is our expression to where we can get people involved on a very grassroots level. And so wherever your listeners are, they can go to the web at conservativepetitions.com and log in and look for the Devlin petition to run as a Democrat for President of the United States. And we'll appreciate their support.
Now, Bill, maybe you can share with some of our listeners. You've been to jail several times because of your not only your strong faith in the Lord, but your strong faith in righteousness, honesty, and justice. Maybe you can share one of those situations with us, and how did you feel as you had to deal with it?
I've been in jail many times for my faith, whether it's pro-life or whether when I was arrested by the Chester County Sheriff's when they were putting a metal cover last year over the Ten Commandments. And one of the great stories out of that...
Wait. Putting a metal cover over the Ten Commandments? Now, where was that?
Well, because there was a local atheist in eastern Pennsylvania who said that she was offended by the Ten Commandments being on the courthouse walls, and she wanted it covered up. So that case was litigated all the way, it was litigated all the way to the Third District Court of Appeals here in Philadelphia, and a three-judge panel ruled that the Ten Commandments should be covered with a metal sheath, a metal shroud. And so the very day that they were covering up the Ten Commandments, I went out, and in a loving, reasonable, rational way, I and three other individuals, three men and one woman, and it was a great, because three of us were are Caucasian, and the woman was African-American, and I said, hey, this is all the civil rights movement redone 40 years later. We sat in front of the Ten Commandments plaque on the side of the Chester County Courthouse there in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and we went limp, and we prevented the workmen from coming in and putting the metal shroud over the Ten Commandments, and we sat there for an hour, and finally they said, unless you move, we will drag you away and arrest you and book you on charges of trespassing. And we just said, that's fine. Well, wouldn't you know it, they dragged us away. They arrested us, but no charges were filed. We actually walked free 2 hours later. The very next night, I was speaking at a National Day of Prayer rally at a local church just 5 miles from that courthouse. And as I sat down in the church, the gentleman next to me handed me a pen, and I looked at the pen, and it said, with compliments to the Chester County Sheriff's, and he said, Mr. Devlin, I was one of the sheriffs that arrested you yesterday, and I just wanted to thank you for being arrested. I wanted to thank you for the courage of your convictions and your commitment. Covering the Ten Commandments on the side of the Chester County Courthouse was the saddest day of our lives. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for your conviction. Thank you for your courage. So, you see, God has a sense of humor. And what man intended for evil, God intended for good. And I literally had the sheriff's department thanking me for allowing them to arrest me that day. So that's what I would encourage your listeners to do, is to look for creative ways that they can serve their community in loving, reasonable, rational ways. You know, we don't want crazy Christians out there doing stupid stuff, but we want Christians to take a stand for righteousness, to cry justice in the land, and to do so in a loving way, even as Jesus did. When my kids went to school the next day, and I was on the front page of every major newspaper in America getting dragged away, and I was on the TV stations and I getting dragged away, my kids, thank God, had a hero in their father. And I'm not saying this to promote myself or promote what I did, but think about your kids, 5 kids going to school the next day, and having their peers saying to them, I think it was great what your dad did. I support him, and your dad is a real hero, and be sure to tell your dad thank you for representing me. I mean, you know, Judy, like they say about the MasterCard commercials, that was priceless to have my kids come home that night and to say, hey, Dad, every kid in my school was talking about you today, and I felt so proud of what you did yesterday.
That's pretty neat. Bill, thanks so much for your time. We've been talking about the Supreme Court's recent decision on sodomy. That's the Lawrence
versus Texas.
When I heard that too, Bill, I was really chagrined, and I was hoping that more people would stand up for the right. And I didn't really hear that other side on the news. I just heard about the case, and then they went to another news story. So thank you so much, Bill, for standing up for the right, and we pray that this interview with Bill is giving you the courage that you need to stand up for those things that you feel are wrong in your community, in your nation, and in your family. Remember, your voice does make a difference. This is Cry Justice. I'm Judy Redlick. Thanks for tuning in today.
This program has been produced and is supported by the Here's Help Radio Network. If you've enjoyed this program and would like to send a tax-deductible gift to keep it on this radio station, please send it to the Here's Help Radio Network, P.O. Box 473, St. Louis, Missouri, 63166. Do it today, and why not write a little note giving us your comments about this program? So much for joining me for today's edition of Cry Justice. Hope it's meant something to you, and I hope you'll tell a friend to tune in next time. For the times on which Cry Justice airs on this station, either contact the station or email me at knlc24judy@hearshelpnet.org. And remember, you can always visit the on-demand section at acbradio.org for episodes of Cry Justice. I'm Judy Redlick. See you next time.